Calling the June 3rd, 2025 regular meeting of the Municipal Transportation Agency Board of Directors and Parking Authority Commission to order. Secretary Silva, please call the roll.
On the roll, Director Chen.
Present.
Chen present. Director Hemminger.
Here.
Hemminger present. Director Henderson.
Here.
Henderson present. Director Hinsey.
Present.
Hinsey present. Chair Tarlov.
Present.
Tarlov present. We are expecting Directors Felder and Kahina to join us shortly. For the record, I note that Director Hinsey is attending this meeting remotely. Director Hinsey is reminded that she must appear on camera throughout the meeting in order to speak or vote on any items. Places you on item number 3. The ringing and use of cell phones and similar sound-producing electronic devices are prohibited at this meeting. The chair may order the removal from the meeting room any person responsible for the ringing or use of a cell phone or other device. Places you on item number 4, approval of minutes for the May 20 regular meeting.
Directors, are there any changes to the minutes? All right, we'll now open public comment for item 4, the minutes, for 2 minutes each.
Members of the public wishing to provide comment will have 2 minutes each. There will be a warning sound at 30 seconds and a chime when the time is up. Any speakers can come up to the podium at this time. Seeing none, we have no accommodations.
Thank you. We'll now close public comment. Colleagues, is there a motion and a second?
I move.
Second.
Secretary Silva, please call the roll.
On the motion to approve the minutes, Director Chen.
Aye.
Chen, aye. Director Hemminger.
Aye.
Hemminger, aye. Director Henderson.
Aye.
Henderson, aye. Director Hinsey.
Aye.
Hinsey, aye. Chair Tarlov.
Aye.
Tarlov, aye. Thank you. The minutes are approved.
Secretary Silva, please call the next item.
Places you on item number 5, communications. I have none.
Secretary Silva, please call the next item.
Places you on item number 6, the director's report.
Good afternoon, board members. Julie Kirschbaum. It is my pleasure to introduce our Livable Streets Director, Kimberly Leung, who's going to recognize our Crossing Guard program.
All right, good afternoon, Chair Tarlov and directors. My name is Kimberly Leung, and I'm the Livable Streets Director. I am so incredibly excited to be here today to be recognizing our school Crossing Guard program. The Crossing Guard program plays a key role in supporting Vision Zero by ensuring the safety of students and families at busy school intersections throughout the city. Our guards provide daily coverage across multiple school sites during arrival and dismissal times, even in challenging weather or traffic conditions. There are extra eyes on the street to, you know, help us identify traffic or safety concerns near schools. Something that I would like to highlight is that our Crossing Guard program builds trust and strong relationships with our community. Crossing guards are often seen as familiar and friendly faces to children and parents. And even earlier this year, many students and parents came on a Tuesday afternoon to this group to tell you how much their crossing guard means to them. So for the 2024 through 2025 school year, our program had over 170 crossing guards supporting over 100 public and private schools throughout San Francisco. And we're only able to support a program of this size because of our dedicated staff, many of whom are here today. So the Crossing Guard program has 7 office staff who manage all the operations of the program and provide year-round coordination, including recruitment, onboarding, training, and performance support. We have a diverse and multilingual office staff who provide training and clear communications to support a diverse workforce of crossing guards. You know, our trainings are provided in English, Spanish, and Cantonese to ensure that all of our guards feel supported and informed. So our office staff have streamlined our training programs, and they've provided an increased level of training expectations. So during the last year in January 2025, our staff worked hard to get everything ready. They coordinated schedules, they kept track of attendance, they prepared training materials, and handed out uniforms to over 170 crossing guards. Our staff also handled daily emails from the public and the crossing guards to ensure we're providing consistent coverage and staffing for all schools. So this program plays such a critical role in advancing safety in San Francisco, and their work impacts the daily lives of people in this city. So I'm just so grateful for everything that they do. So at this time, I'm going to hand out a few certificates and then invite our Crossing Guard program manager to come up here to share a few remarks. All right, so first off, I would like to recognize Osier Barbero. Congratulations. Adrena Scott.
Let's hold our applause to the end.
Angie Barroso. Tommy Loy. And Bashir Algaheim.
All right, thank you, Kimberly. Members of the board, Director Kirschbaum, I just want to thank you for your continued support, and we're excited and honored to be here today. As Kimberly mentioned, the Crossing Guard program plays a vital role in community safety. They help ensure students are crossing the students and families safely and building trust and a relationship within the communities. I'm also proud to stand alongside my team over here, who are basically the backbone of the operation of this program. Their tireless work, it's just, amazing. And they're like there every day to ensure that the crossing guards can focus on what's most important for them, which is crossing the kids and making sure that they're safe. And without them, the program wouldn't run as efficient as possible, so I do want to thank them for that. And although we're not here with us today, I do want to say a special thanks to our crossing guards, who rain or shine are always out there every morning, every afternoon, and every day, with just full dedication and care, crossing students and making sure that they're getting to school safely and, back to their homes as well. So thank you again for this opportunity, and, it's an honor to be here. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bashir and team. The next thing I wanted to talk about is Muni Safe Day Out. We held our second Muni Safe Day Out on May 21st. I really want to thank Chair Tarloff for coming. You may not be able to spot her in these photos because she was decked head to toe in orange. But we had over 60 staff from across the agency, along with bilingual community partners from Chinese for Affirmative Action and the Community Youth Center join us. We went out in groups. I think we had 8 groups throughout the system. They put up signage emphasizing how important it was to speak up when people experience harassment on our system. Every group had a Chinese speaker and a Spanish speaker. And in many cases, a Filipino speaker as well. So we were able to really communicate with our customers, show that we really care about safety on our system, and we are taking proactive steps on a continuous basis to improve safety. This program started with the Muni Safety Equity Initiative by surveying 1,600 customers. So these extended conversations build on that deeper surveying work so that when we do make investments, they're the right investments. Some of those include deploying our staff to areas of concern. It also includes improving lighting at some of our bus stops, particularly in our Muni Equity neighborhoods, and studying the data from every incident so that we can identify ways to prevent challenges. We also, as you know, have 11 cameras on every system and on every vehicle, and we have designed our seating to really encourage community reinforcement. So we have a lot of upstanders on our system that help to keep their fellow passengers safe. So really want to thank everybody who participated in making Muni safe on the 21st, but on every day. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about was a different type of safety, which is our infrastructure, mostly because I just wanted to show you these banana photos. Our cable car machinery team is in the process of rebuilding and replacing the sheaves that pull the cable car system. Each sheave must be pulled out of the ground one at a time. All of the internal components are replaced or refurbished. This is not something you can buy off the shelf, so we really need to restore and protect it. They are not small and they are not light. They are 8 by 10 feet in diameter, and they can weigh up to 8,000 pounds. We just finished some of the most complex work in the cable car basement. We have also been working throughout the spring to replace them throughout the street. This is very old infrastructure. It is not going perfectly. We have a sheave cap at Powell and Market that is stuck, and we are working on a strategy to get that removed so that we can continue this important work. But it is work that no other agency, no outside vendor could complete. This is really the in-house talent born out of generations of cable car machinery that enables us to do this work. And I'm really excited about it and excited about the reliability it's going to provide for our system. I also am really appreciative to our cable car stakeholders like the Union Square Alliance, Fisherman's Wharf, CBD, SF Travel. They've been meeting with us to design this work in a way that doesn't impact tourism. So, for example, the work is only being done Monday through Thursday. It's only being done kind of one day at a time so that if somebody comes in town for a few days, they can still ride their favorite cable car line. And they're doing the work in a way that one cable is always open at any given time. So that feedback was really helpful. It helped us shape this work. And we are excited that it's going so smoothly. Thank you. That ends my report.
Thank you very much, Director Kirschbaum. Before I open public comment on the director's report, I would like to remind members of the public that they may provide comment on the director's report. And Director Kirschbaum spoke on the following topics, just as a reminder. There was a special recognition of the crossing guards, Muni Safe Day Out, and our cable car sheave work. If you feel the director missed addressing a topic, you may comment on that during item 9, general public comment. If you're here to speak on an item later in today's agenda, please wait to make your comment until those items are called. With that, public comment on the director's report is now open for 2 minutes each.
Members of the public wishing to provide comment will have 2 minutes each. There will be a warning sound at 30 seconds and a chime when the time is up. Any speakers can come up to the podium at this time. Seeing none in the room, we do have one accommodation request. Speaker, you've been unmuted. This is for the director's report.
I wish to pass at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. No other speakers.
We'll now close public comment. Colleagues, do you have any questions or comments on Director Kirschbaum's report? All right. I would just like to say that it was a real pleasure to participate in Muni Safe Day Out. It's very important work, and so much depends on our customers' feelings of safety and support during their ride. There are so many messages, both overt and more subtle, that let people know that they're in a place where if something were to happen, there will be help available, there will be an opportunity to make a report, that we have a lot of security systems in place that may not be very obvious to the public, but by and large, I found people very receptive to the message, and also it was just a really great opportunity to work more closely with some of our very skilled and caring staff. So I had a really fun day. So thank you so much for including me. All right. Secretary Silva, please call the next item.
Places you on item number 7, the Citizens Advisory Council report. We have no report today. Places you on item number 8, new or unfinished business by board members.
Directors, is there any new or unfinished business today? All right. Secretary Silva, please call the next item.
Places you on item number 9, general public comment. Members of the public may address the Board of Directors on matters that are within the Board's jurisdiction and are not on today's calendar. Want to open public comment?
All right. We'll now close public comment.
Open.
We will now open public comment. Thank you.
Members of the public wishing to provide comment, we'll have 2 minutes each. There'll be a warning at 30 seconds and a time when the time is up. Any speakers can come up at this time. Not seeing any, but we do have one accommodation request. Speaker, you've been unmuted. This is for general public comment.
Yeah, this is Trevor Weiner. Now, this weekend, I got a notice that paratransit fees will be increased by 10 cents for a one-way ticket. Now, the date of the notice was for March, and I received it this weekend. Now, it's a real inconvenience for me living in assisted living, scrounge up dimes to pay for that extra fee. And also, I really found it really difficult. We got a fare increase in January, and now we're getting another one 6 months later. Now, this was done without any public notice, and I really think it should be investigated. It's really unfair to hit paratransit users with an extra fee. For all I know, the Muni bus fares have gone up by 10 cents. And I'd really like you to look into this. And I expect an explanation of what was going on. Why is there a fare increase? You know, you really have a responsibility because this is happening on your watch. Thank you.
Thank you. No other speakers.
We will now close public comment. All right. Secretary Silva, please call the next item.
Directors, that places you on item 10, consent calendar. These items are considered to be simple or routine and will be acted upon by a single vote, unless a member of the board or public requests that an item be taken off consent and heard separately. For all speakers providing public comment, please identify which item number you are speaking to. Item 10.1, approving various routine parking and traffic modifications listed under items 10.1 A and B in the agenda. Item 10.2, approving a roadway shared spaces street closure application by a local business for Maiden Lane between Kearney Street and Grant Avenue, Tuesday, June 3, 2025, through Wednesday, June 3, 2026, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m., each Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. to 10 p.m., each Saturday and Sunday, and making environmental review findings. Item 10.3, supporting the renewal of the Dog Patch and Northwest Potrero Hill Green Benefit District, GBD, and authorizing the Director of Transportation to submit a ballot in favor of the renewal formation of the GBD. That concludes your consent calendar.
Thank you. We will now open public comment on the consent calendar for 2 minutes each.
Members of the public wishing to provide comment will have 2 minutes each. There will be a chime or warning at 30 seconds and a chime when the time is up. Any speakers can come up to the podium at this time. Seeing none, and I have no accommodation requests.
Thank you. We will now close public comment. May I have a motion and a second to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
Secretary Silva, please call the roll.
On the motion to approve the consent calendar, Director Chen.
Aye.
Chen, aye. Director Felder.
Aye.
Felder, aye. Director Heminger.
Aye.
Heminger, aye. Director Henderson.
Aye.
Henderson, aye. Director Hinsey.
Aye.
Hinsey, aye. Director Kahina.
Aye.
Kahina, aye. Chair Tarlov.
Aye.
Tarlov, aye. Thank you. The consent calendar is approved.
Secretary Silva, please call the next item.
places you on your regular calendar. Item number 11, amending transportation code section 402 to raise the mobile parking payment convenience fee from 10 cents to 35 cents with provisions for increases up to 39 cents to match the per transaction fee service fee paid by the SFMTA to mobile parking payment contractors.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Directors. Rob Malone with the Parking and Operations Group Unit of the Streets Division, here to discuss the mobile parking payment convenience fee. I have a brief presentation for you today. Takes a village. Some context for mobile payment in terms of overall payments at meters in the city. We have been using a mobile payment app as an option to customers since 2012. Use of mobile payment apps has increased over the years and has most recently been around 36% of folks paying are using the mobile payment option. I'm going to discuss convenience fee policy as an overall issue. We, for the first time as an agency, and this board approved, first began charging users a convenience fee just May 20th of this year, where the fee went to 10 cents. We have also recently are working on new contracts that are due to take effect very soon, within which the vendors are going to be receiving from the agency a 35-cent transaction fee. So I just want to clarify, the transaction fee is what the agency is required to pay the vendors under the contract. Our goal in the convenience fee that we have brought forth to you today is to enact a convenience fee in an equivalent amount of 35 cents to the transaction fee. Thereby, when the customer pays 35 cents, they will basically be covering one for one the cost to the agency. So there's not a net cost to the agency for that transaction fee that the agency is paying to the vendors. We as an agency began this service with no fee to the customer. That was at a time when the cost to the agency was very low. So for many years, the fee to the agency was only 4 cents per transaction. As the back-end costs of running these type of apps has continued to increase, software development costs, maintenance costs, et cetera, we did negotiate under an existing, soon-to-be-finished contract, an increase in the payment to our vendor from 4 cents to 10 cents. And then we requested, it was in follow-up to parking optimization presentation a few months ago, where the board supported and then subsequently approved passing on that 10-cent convenience fee to the customer, which was put into effect just on May 20th of this year. And we recommended this. Partially, this is in keeping with an overall trend in this area among cities to be passing on, to be charging folks a convenience fee. At right in this slide, you can see convenience fees that are charged by various cities. Just want to highlight others in the general Bay Area, Northern California area. For example, our colleagues, our friends over in Oakland are charging 30-cent transaction fee. Another closest city in Sacramento is charging a 35-cent transaction fee. And just to give a little further context to the amount that's recommended for the convenience fee, as I mentioned just a moment ago, users were first started paying this fee on May 20th. At that May 20th meeting, an item came to you all that was requesting approval of two contracts, but also within the same item, approval of this convenience fee that we're back to discuss with you again today. We had a discussion about that. Several members of the board inquired about the possibility of charging, could we charge customers more than 35 cents? Can you talk to us more about the basis for that and what we could potentially have the ability to charge? It is possible that under the cost recovery rules and other relevant statutes that we could potentially charge more. We have discussed that with city attorney. There's a little bit more work and research that needs to be done to be sure that any proposal beyond 35 cents is fully founded. And Madam City Attorney, I don't know if you want to weigh in. No, you just, but she would be able to probably tell you more about that. So our recommendation is, because we are a little bit concerned, we want to cover the cost of the transaction fee that's in these contracts that are getting ready to take effect. Which is why the 35 cents is what was recommended. That said, a jump from the 10 cents that is currently being paid today to 35 cents is quite a significant jump. Even though it's a small amount of money, it's like 10 cents, an additional 25 cents, it doesn't seem like that much, but obviously on a percentage basis, it's very large. So we're unsure about exactly what effect that's gonna have on usage of these apps. What percentage of customers are going to care about that fee being imposed? It might be just a few, or it could be more than we expect. So our desire is to start with a fee that's going to cover our costs, to be able to study that. In our slide here, it said we talk about 2 years. We're not wed to that amount of time. We will be doing from day one, once a fee higher than 10 cents goes into effect, we will be gathering data as every day. We'll be analyzing the impact on utilization and getting a sense of what that elasticity of demand is for customers on this. And we are able to share that with this board at any time of your choosing. And lastly, just wanted to reiterate that we certainly do want to cover those costs. However, we do support an overall policy goal of we want folks to use the mobile payment apps. It helps support our overall trend where we have been going with the payment policy for meters on the street. Evidenced by our recently completed meter upgrade where we went to, multi-space meters in half the city. The mobile apps provide an appreciated level of convenience to folks who don't want to walk maybe to the corner. So the availability of the mobile apps is very important, and we, again, want to cover our costs, but don't want to dissuade customers from using the mobile apps. With that, it concludes my presentation, but I'm, of course, happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Malone. Colleagues, are there any clarifying questions before we go to public comment? All right. I will now open public comment for item 11, 2 minutes each.
Members of the public wishing to provide comment will have 2 minutes each. There will be a warning at 30 seconds and a chime when the time is up. Any members of the public can come up to the podium at this time. Seeing none in the room, and I have no accommodations.
Well, we'll now close public comment. Directors, any additional questions or comments? Director Kahina.
There we go. Thank you so much for your presentation, Rob. I did have a question as to whether or not you and the team modeled what a 2% or 2-cent increase would look like, and if you could just tell us, if you did do that, what sort of revenue did the model show that would
absolutely
yield?
So based on latest usage is about 6 million transactions with the mobile apps per year. So every 1 cent is about $60,000.
Okay.
And that does, just to clarify, that does presume no elasticity.
Right.
We expect some amount of elasticity, so it would probably be a little bit less than that. How much less than that, we don't know exactly, but about 6 million transactions a year is where we are today.
So a 2-cent increase would of the 35 to 37 would be 120.
Somewhere between 100 and 120,000.
That would be like a healthy guesstimate. And you know, like we did ask you to consider if there's any way we could pull this lever to generate any sort of revenue. It seems like it would be modest if we were to increase it by 2 cents. Is in your staff report, it did show that there was going to be a savings about over the course of, sorry, I just want to make sure I'm pulling up the right thing, over the course of a few years of $11 million. Just wanted to understand how you got to that number. It seems like it's 5 years or so. But there would be $11 million in savings. So just wanted to understand like the math behind that.
Sure. Now. So there's a 6-year maximum term under the two contracts that were conditionally approved by this board 2 weeks ago. So we did, for the purposes of, you know, modeling the life of those contracts, model the transactions. So there has been an upward trend in transactions. So we don't expect, you know, 6 million transactions or so is in the latest year. You know, our hope is that they and our modeling here was based on an assumption of usage continuing to grow moderately, and that's why it's not linear, I guess.
Got it. You know. And as it stands right now, the action before us today allows for some flexibility in terms of what staff can do. Because there is a range that we're approving, not a fixed number. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe it's from 35 to 39 cents. And,
okay.
And just to clarify, the way the contracts are written, again, it's not what you're being asked to approve. But if it were to mirror what's in the contract, it's 35 cents for the first 3 years, or first 2 years, 37 cents in the third and fourth years, and then 39 in the fifth and sixth years, is what we will be paying to the vendors. Again, which doesn't necessarily have to be is tied to the convenience fee, but if the goal was to mirror that, then that's what the modeling is based on, is that the convenience fee increasing in sync with the transaction fee increases that are in the contracts.
Got it.
It's
mirroring what's in the concept. I'm tracking. Thank you. Okay. Well, I appreciate you and the team and Alexi for modeling what a different scenario would look like. It doesn't sound like it would yield as much as we thought it might, but. You know, I'll defer to the other folks in the queue right now, and I'll see what my other colleagues say. But it seems like the proposal you're putting forth before us seems like the most prudent action. But I'll wait for my other colleagues to opine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Kahina. Director Heminger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to dive into a couple of numbers, too. In one of your slides, it indicates that we could go higher in terms of cost recovery than we are going in the present proposal. If we were to get to full cost recovery, and this would be for all the other costs that are not covered yet, how much would that raise?
Sure. So, and just to clarify, that's my understanding that in terms of my understanding is that we have the ability to go beyond into cost recovery. That's, it needs to be clarified still exactly what the legal underpinning of that. But that primarily the other costs involved are what are called the merchant fees associated with a credit card transaction that we all pay. And those are roughly, for this population transaction, about 25 cents a transaction. So if you were really trying to recover the transaction fee that we're paying to the vendor, 35 cents in this case, and then it's an average of about 25 cents that we're paying to the card issuers, that would be roughly the total cost, so about 60 cents.
Well, but if you went up by a quarter, that's going to raise a lot more than 60 cents, right?
Well, I was just adding 35 cents and then 25 cents.
I'm looking for revenue generation. So what would the revenue generation be if you raised it by a quarter?
You mean in addition to
the 35?
We're not talking about the merchant fees. We're talking about, I mean, my understanding is that we would be limited to no more than that, around 60, that you're covering what your costs are.
Okay. And again, anyone with a calculator, just help us out here.
Rob, so. I think Director Heminger's question was, what would, for example, an additional quarter cent raise? We did, Rob and I discussed prior to this meeting, that if we went from 35 cents to 55 cents, it raises about an additional $1 to $1.2 million.
Okay. So that's more in the ballpark. Now, when you briefed me this morning on this item, one of the concerns you had about that is that you can charge those, you could recover those costs of those fees from the mobile users, but not from the credit card users. Is that right?
That's correct. So just to repeat what I said a few minutes ago, we are concerned about elasticity of use of the mobile apps. And one of the things that could happen, say for argument's sake, you take a hypothesis. You go for a larger fee, and it does deter some significant amount of users. If those users go and decide, this isn't worth it to me, I'm just going to walk to the meter and use my credit card, we're still paying that same merchant fee. And if they use the meter, we are not allowed to, we're forbidden by some combination of card issuer rules and treasury rules laws that you cannot charge folks a different price if they're using a credit card versus if they're paying cash at a payment method that accepts cash. The reason we can charge a convenience fee at all for use of the mobile app is because it's providing an enhanced service. It's providing some functionality that's not available to the user if they go to the meter.
One other vector, just to put it on the table, that helps me better understand the issue here. Your list of cities, it appears you sort of picked a middle point in the sense of our 35 cents. If you went just down the list a few cities to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, somebody to emulate for the most part, that's a dime, right? That's a dime more.
So let me say one thing I don't know offhand, Senator Today, of any of these cities is the details of their, I don't know anything about their contractual relationships with their vendors.
Right.
Just to repeat something I think was mentioned last meeting, when we staff developed an RFP that would lead to new contracts, we decided not to have potential vendors bid their transaction fee. We didn't want price to be the primary driver. What we did is survey the market, see what and decide what we felt was a reasonable price, and we stipulated the price to the potential vendor community. So again, I can't say for sure, but I am aware, not about these specific cities, but I am aware of cities who have multiple vendors and their transaction fees, their convenience fees are different for different apps because they left it open.
Right.
And they said, oh, well, this, and people get to choose. And like, hey, if I want a customer, a savvy customer could say, oh, I just need only the minimum service. I'm going to look at it and I'm going to use the app that's cheaper. We didn't want price to be a factor, which is why we stipulated it.
Last question. I think you indicated in your testimony just now that you're asking for, you're recommending a fee of 35 cents for 2 years. And I think you said you weren't wedded to that 2 year number. Is that right?
Correct.
I thought I heard from your team this morning that they think they can have an adequate data collection activity done by about 6 months.
Yes. Yes.
So could
that's
we?
Correct.
Would you have any concern if we changed that 2 years to 6 months?
No, we would not.
Okay. Colleagues, I would recommend at least that because, I think the concern about elasticity of demand is legitimate. And as long as we have enough months under our belts, we could sort of answer that question. And I think there are enough open issues here that might justify a higher fee that we ought to take a little time and understand that better and what the trade-offs might be. But 6 months seems to me to be reasonable. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Director Hinsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. Just to clarify something off of Director Hemminger's questions. So to what degree is the current and your proposed, well, not current, your proposed 35-cent convenience fee a cost recovery value. So do we cost recover completely at 35 cents, or can you enlighten me as to that?
No, not completely. It recovers the vast majority of the projected cost of the vendor contracts, which the transaction fee. There are a few ancillary services in the contract that are spelled out in the staff report. Under maybe it's around, I'm sorry, I don't have the percentage off the top of my head, maybe 5% of the total value. There's some marketing services, the option. They're in as optional. We may request some of these services from them. We may not. So, but it's recouping the vast majority of the transaction cost paid to the vendor. Just to,
And then I guess this is to your evaluation. It struck me 2 weeks ago, and I don't mean to speak for her, but it struck me 2 weeks ago that when Chair Tarlov was trying this app, she's, her experience was that, she'd be pay more for the convenience. And so when you look at this as an evaluation tool, how are we going to determine if there are more people like that out there who would pay more for the convenience of being able to pay by phone?
That's an interesting question. So, I mean, the more straightforward part of the evaluation is how many people are using it and does the usage go down? I think that's a very interesting question, though. Well, how do you know how many people would be, I'm totally willing to pay more? I think we'd have to think about how to look into that, but we can certainly do that.
Yeah, because I do wonder if there are more of those people out there, particularly younger people who are always using like mobile wallets and all these mobile payment apps. I do agree with Director Heminger that if we can do a study in 6 months, perhaps you can bring that back to us in addition to this item, and we can see if we can make this revenue generating. Because I like Director Heminger and looking at this with an eye towards possible revenue generation, but for today, I think this makes sense. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Director Hensey. Director Felder.
Thanks. I largely sort of echo Director Heminger's comments. I mean, as I expressed it at our last meeting, I do think there's a revenue opportunity here, and I think we need to be careful that while, you know, I appreciate the caution here and concern over elasticity, we do need to generate more revenue. And I think while, you know, we can look at this as an area of modest opportunity, the reality is that if we do take full advantage of the opportunity to cover, you know, to fully work through the cost recovery, you know, we could be dealing with $1.2 million plus or minus here. And that's the order of magnitude that I think we should be evaluating. So I tend to align with the notion that, yes, let's take the 6 months to figure it out. But that at that point, let's not be talking about whether or not we're looking at a 2 cent increase. I think we should be talking about, you know, a 20 or a 25 cent increase. And so I think we should be prepared at that point to evaluate that opportunity.
Thank you. Director Kirschbaum?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the discussion and the board's patience in allowing us some additional time to go back and look at this. I think my recommendation is that we look at it a little more broadly. I think what Rob is concerned about is a shift between payment methods, especially from a efficient payment method to an inefficient payment method. So we will also make sure we come back armed with information about what are our opportunities to charge a similar transaction fee for credit card users, and if there are any legal restrictions for that, and also if it might just be simpler to increase the base fee, you know, which is another way to generate income for parking. Just attach the board's goal of, you know, 25 cents, but to the hourly fee, for example, instead of to a transaction fee. So we'll look at this a couple different ways and bring you all some choices with the goal of generating between $1 to $1.5 million additional revenue off this program.
Thank you. Director Chen.
Thank you, Chair. I echo a lot of my fellow colleagues who are asking for options. I'm not sure if this fee is the given I think the structuring, and then I think also some of the legal constraints that we have. I'm not sure if this fee is the way to do it. And also legally in terms of the resolution that we want to approve, I'm not sure how we would say, oh, well, we're only going to approve a 35 cent transaction fee for 6 months. So I want to make sure that perhaps that we pass the resolution as is, but then we ask staff to come back in 6 months for more options. And then also echoing Director Kirschbaum, I think that set of options may not necessarily be limited to this specific fee. I think we can talk more in generally about street parking and street metering, and then also I think what the team may have some ideas around general curb use management in general. So this is like to the staff. I think there's a lot of interest from the directors in thinking about how we can provide value to the public and also provide revenue to the agency. Given how the contract is set up and how these things up, I'm not sure this fee is exactly the way that we would necessarily maximize to the limit. There might be other options. So I would say pass the resolution now as is. Maybe you come back in 6 months. We want to look at maybe the, a broader menu of options that the team may be thinking about.
City Attorney Cleveland Knowles, do you have any concerns about an amendment as proposed by Director Heminger?
Thank you, Chair Tarloff. I was not clear. Director Heminger, did you want the increase in the fee to only last 6 months, or do you want staff to come back in 6 months with options along the lines that Director Kirschbaum?
Both.
So the fee would sunset?
Yeah.
Zero?
Deadlines have a way of concentrating the mind. And I don't think having a deadline here is a bad idea. If it's better to be 8 months instead of six, that's fine with me too. But I think putting a stake in the ground is a useful first step.
Okay, we can make that amendment today to sunset the fee. I think Director Chen was suggesting just to come back in 6 or 8 months to staff, but either one would be fine
from a
legal perspective.
I would just like to point out that 6 months is our December meeting, which I think we've had difficulties in the past with holidays and fees and things that are, you know, considered that have some feeling around them. I would personally, I'm not opposed to giving a deadline, but I think it would be better to have it, say, in February, which would be, I think, 9 months.
Yes, I would also just note that whenever you readopt it, it needs 30 days to go into effect. So that should be built into the timeline as well.
Director Felder, did you have?
Thanks. I personally would be okay if, rather than having it sunset, we just have a presentation where we can assess whether or not it would be appropriate to adjust the fee at that time. I think that takes a little pressure off many of the dynamics that are being discussed. I also agree that we should be looking at this more broadly, but I think that we should be looking at this in terms of maximizing the opportunity in each of these individual opportunities that are, you know, that exist around parking. And so I'm not sure that I would want to put a limitation, whether it's, you know, 1.2 to 1.5 million. I think we need to be more aggressive in terms of how we approach this. And so I'm fine with all of what's been put forward. I just don't want there to be a limitation on what we're looking for here, because if there's greater opportunity that we can all feel good about, I think we should be evaluating that in the totality of the exploration.
I'll second that motion.
And to clarify, the motion is to approve the...
All the stuff that Julie said, and we'll make it voluntary.
Very good. I actually, Mr. Malone, I have a couple of quick questions. So just to be super, super clear for anybody who might be listening today, this convenience fee is voluntary in the sense that anyone who doesn't want to pay it can walk to the meter and pay with cash or a credit card. Is that correct?
Correct.
And another piece that I think it is very important is, and this is actually my question, we pay a transaction fee, and in turn we are charging the customer a convenience fee. And I don't think I understand the reason for the change in the name. Is it a legal requirement or
standard industry terminology?
Okay. When the fee becomes inconvenient in my mind, I think I made my feelings, my fandom of the program pretty clear at the last meeting. But paying it again One of the great pieces of convenience is that you can, you know, without having to go back to the meter, you know, increase your time. Your lunch is running long, and that transaction also is subject to a convenience fee. So that's
yes.
That's, you know, very. It's a very convenient element of the program, but the fee starts feeling a little bit more onerous at that point. But I can see myself being willing to pay it, certainly. That's all of my questions. Colleagues, are we, Susan, did you? Okay. Are we ready to, I heard a motion and a second.
Could you repeat the motion?
I would move that we approve the proposal in terms of the rate increase with the caveat that we receive a presentation in 6 months on the elasticity of demand that exists as a result of the price increase, such that we can assess whether a further increase is appropriate at that time, and that that presentation include other ideas within the parking program to increase revenue.
So that's not a piece of the legislation. This is
a piece of the presentation.
A direction, yeah. That we're providing. Just to clarify, as we're talking about the direction, it sounded to me that there might be some legal considerations that we have to just make sure that we understand, in addition to the effect on demand of the increased price of the fee. So, do you still second
that? I still do.
Okay, very good.
Sorry, just a friendly clarification. Is it 6 months or 8 months? Because I think we talked about avoiding the holidays for this.
I think we said no sunset. Is that with right, Director Felder?
Yeah, it's not sunsetting. So
got it.
I would say we can have it in whatever.
We'll do our best to get a presentation late fall.
All right. Secretary Silva, please call the roll.
Okay. On that motion, Director Chen.
Aye.
Chen, aye. Director Felder.
Aye.
Felder, aye. Director Heminger.
Aye.
Heminger, aye. Director Henderson.
Aye.
Henderson, aye. Director Hinsey.
Aye.
Hinsey, aye. Director Kahina.
Aye.
Kahina, aye. Chair Tarlov.
Aye.
Tarlov, aye. Thank you. That motion passes.
Secretary Silva, please call the next item.
Places you on item number 12, presentation and discussion regarding a state budget and regional revenue measure update.
It is my pleasure to introduce Judson True to the SFMTA board. Judson is SFMTA's new chief of staff and director of external affairs. He comes to us with an incredible wealth of experience. Judson and I first worked together when I was working on the Transit Effectiveness Project 17 years ago, because he was our agency spokesperson at the time. He also served as David Chu's chief of staff, both when he was in the Board of Supervisors and with the Assembly. And most recently, he worked for the Breed administration, helping to expedite some of our most important housing projects. So Judson is a really thoughtful communicator, but also, I think, a sophisticated leader, and I'm very excited to have him on board. Among his many easy jobs, he is our agency's point person for all of the regional revenue measures, as well as anything we pursue locally. So you will be hearing from him periodically, today with a focus on both the state budget and the regional revenue measure. Thank you.
Thank you for that introduction, Director Kirschbaum. I think I should just not do this presentation and just ride on that. But it's great to be here. Chair Tarlov and directors, as Director Kirschbaum said, I am Judson True, Chief of Staff and Director of External Affairs for the SFMTA. It's amazing to be back at this organization, and just as a San Francisco resident for more than 25 years, and a former and now current employee, it's just amazing to be a part of what this organization delivers for the people of the city and county and visitors every day. So thank you very much. I'm joined today by Monique Webster, who is our manager of regional, state, and federal government affairs, and she's a crucial part of our team on both of these efforts I'm going to brief you on today. I am here to talk about two related measures, the state budget and our regional revenue measure, which is Senate Bill 63 or SB 63. At your last meeting, CFO Mawarder did provide a very brief thumbnail. The governor's May revise had just come out, but we thought it was important to give you more information about where we are in the state budget, as well as we thought it was a timely moment to update you on the regional revenue measure. So that's what I'm here to do. On the state budget, many of you have followed the governor's May revise, which came out May 14th. That is the governor's sort of second stab at releasing a budget as part of the annual process. The first one is in January. This January of 2025, which seems like quite a long time ago, the state budget had a very small surplus of just over $350 million. But as we know, a lot has happened since then in the country that's affected and in the state. We had the horrific wildfires in Southern California that have had a big impact on the budget. And of course, a fair amount of national uncertainty that has affected our economy here in California. So after all of those changes between January and May, the governor projected a $12 billion deficit for the state and proposed to close it with a variety of spending reductions, delayed spending, fund shifts, and withdrawals from the state's rainy day fund. For transit, there was no mention of the $2 billion request that was proposed by East Bay State Senator Jesse Adeguin and Assemblymember Mark Gonzalez of LA. That request has been supported by a broad array of stakeholders, including, of course, our mayor, our Board of Supervisors, and which is also the board, of course, of the County Transportation Authority, and, of course, this body and all of us. And so that there was silence on that $2 billion request, and even more concerning, there were reductions to transit funding that we are, you know, now very much involved in. In particular, the May revise zeroed out previously planned commitments to transit capital and operating relief money made under SB 125. We'll get into those details. At the same time as these budget changes were proposed in the May revise, the governor proposed an extension of the state's CAP and trade program, now renamed CAP and Invest. These two things are related, but not the same, and they're not on the same timeline, as I'll talk about a little bit today. Initially launched a little more than 10 years ago, the state's cap and trade program aims to reduce emissions by setting a limit on pollution and then creating a market to buy and sell the right to pollute effectively, and or the ability to pollute. And so this is one of California's signature climate initiatives, and it also has generated revenue for important projects throughout both policies and projects throughout the state that reduce greenhouse gases. And of course, transit, you know, we believe, and I think the state has shown a commitment to as well, believes that public transit is an important part of that that effort. The program is right now under law slated to expire in 2030. So the governor is proposing, in addition to the renaming, a 15-year extension to 2045. Right now, cap and trade, kind of as a program exists now, it has kind of two ways that it spends money. One is what's called continuous appropriation. So there's a certain percentage of the revenue that's generated that goes to particular buckets, and then the rest, the governor and the legislature would spend on an annual basis as part of the state budget. And so all of the existing continuous appropriations, including important transit funding, were essentially just absent. And the governor's has planted a flag on two major priorities of his, which are high-speed rail and CAL FIRE. The $1 billion that's in the governor's proposal for high-speed rail is about what that program has received of the $4 to $4.5 billion a year that the program has generated. The $1.5 billion that he's proposed for CAL FIRE is a shift of a general fund program to cap and trade. So that's important. Where it really affects us is the risk that we now have for the continuous appropriations and some of the discretionary appropriations for the Low Carbon Transit Operations Program, and this will be, we'll get a little more acronym heavy now with LCTOP, and it puts at risk the TRCET program, which we'll get into a little bit more as well, both existing grant awards under cycles 5 and 7 and future cycles. So that's really where we are deeply concerned, is about the ongoing direction of funding from cap and trade to transit. Of course, those capital projects, now on the SFMTA funding that's at risk, we really want to emphasize the risk to our capital projects. And so this is $245 million that will be going to Muni Forward projects, including on some of our most heavily utilized corridors, and our essential train control upgrade projects. So that's quite a significant concern, not for this coming fiscal year, but in the out fiscal years, where we have money programmed that we're expecting. And in some cases, it's been explicitly released, and we need to really advocate for that. And I want to emphasize that while that's capital, those are capital projects, they of course have an impact on service through the efficiencies and improved reliability of Muni Forward projects and the just essential train control upgrade project. There is operating funds at risk, ongoing operating funds from the LCTOP program of around $17 million annually. That shifts a little bit, but those funds are what we use to support our Muni discount fare programs. And so those are at risk essentially starting in the fiscal year, we think especially in the fiscal year that starts July 1st, 2026, so not this coming year, but the year after, the one where we have the significant fiscal cliff. And that's a real concern. I do want to also mention state operating relief funds. So these are funds that have come from the state in the last several years as part of the state operating relief money. And these funds are at risk in the sense that there's a smaller pie overall. And so we want to make sure that our funds are not affected. We do have $209 million that we're expecting for the fiscal year that starts July 1st that we consider somewhat at risk, but nothing like the risk we face to our capital funding. And in fact, this money has been programmed by MTC, and they have the cash in the bank. So that eases our concern, but technically it still is at risk. And in fact, the MTA board, you all will see as soon as your next meeting, the sort of routine effort that we bring forward to authorize the SFMTA to seek essentially a claim from MTC that for all the money that we would expect from them in the coming fiscal year, of which this is about 2/3. So that this is really important, that our capital funding is what we consider most at risk. The next steps on the budget discussion, we are now in the time where the governor has presented the May revise, and the negotiations are in the legislature and with the governor. So that's the Senate pro tem, the assembly speaker, and then the budget chairs in each committee, as well as some of the subcommittee chairs, are working with their caucuses to come up with their negotiating positions, and they'll work with the governor. There is a hard deadline of June 15th for approval of the main budget bill in Sacramento, and that's where we expect some of the issues for this immediate coming fiscal year to be addressed. We are working with, of course, the mayor's office, other elected leaders and advocates to voice our concern, because we believe that it's very important for the state to continue these commitments to transit funding because of how important we are to both the economy and the climate and air quality goals. And our position specifically are to support maintaining the state's existing commitments to TRCIP, LCTOP, and SB 125 through 2030, and support growing and maintaining the transit capital and operations beyond that. So one thing that's worth emphasizing is that budget, junior, and trailer policy bills do not have that same June 15th deadline. So this is where the cap and invest reauthorization will live, and that those discussions will continue throughout the summer. So main budget expected to be done in a few weeks, has to be done in a few weeks, but the cap and invest negotiations will continue likely through session. So that's the big picture on the state budget and cap and invest. I know it's fairly complicated. I'm happy to take questions either now or at the end of the presentation. I can keep going. All right, pivoting to SB 63. This is, again, Senate Bill 63, the Connect Bay Area Act. This is authored by our own State Senator Scott Wiener and Senator Jesse Adeguin. I should have mentioned previously as well that Senator Wiener is the chair of the Budget Committee in the State Senate, so we have a well-positioned champion for transit there who we are working with regularly on the budget issues. Many of you are familiar with this measure. It's very important to the future of transit, not only here in San Francisco with Muni, but in the entire Bay Area. It is designed to avoid major service cuts on all of the regional systems, BART, Caltrain, AC Transit, and us. What it does technically, it creates a new district governed by MTC with Alameda, Contra Costa, and San Francisco automatically within it, and with options for San Mateo and Santa Clara County to join. It establishes a half-cent sales tax for between 10 and 15 years, but it does allow San Francisco to go between up to 1 cent. It also has a provision that allows us to San Francisco and San Mateo to go up to 1 cent with a separate measure in 1/8 of a cent increments that could be put on by the Board of Supervisors. I do want to mention that this measure is co-authored by our assembly member, Catherine Stephanie, and we appreciate that. I do also want to remind everyone that the regional measure is a key piece of our strategy to close our deficit for the FY27, but it is not all of it, but it is incredibly significant. A few additional provisions of SB 63 I'll mention. It allows for up to 10% per year for transit transformation to grow ridership around the region, and 1% to MTC for administration. It provides for the development of a detailed expenditure plan. That development is delegated to county transportation agencies, so we're working very closely with the SFCTA on that. That effort is currently underway. A couple of provisions that are important are that it requires recipient agencies to have third-party review and only use funds for operations unless granted an exception. And then finally, and this is something that we support at SFMTA, it allows MTC to withhold funding from agencies deemed noncompliant with regional network management policies and goals. That's a set of policies and goals that came out of a Blue Ribbon Task Force during the pandemic, and that's aiming at improving coordination across Bay Area transit operators with things like fare integration, schedule coordination, and wayfinding, and as I said, we support those efforts. I think it's important to mention the fair share scenario discussions that I just touched on. Those are the conversations that are underway across the region between the operators, county transportation authorities, the bill authors, of course, other elected officials, and this is essentially developing the expenditure plan. The one thing I did want to mention, and this is in line with the work of the Muni Funding Working Group, we have worked in San Francisco with the mayor's office, with the SFCTA, and the board of supervisors that sits with the as a TA to seek up to $170 million as Muni's sort of allocation from the regional measure in a 1 cent scenario where San Francisco is at 1 cent. There is an August 11th deadline to produce this expenditure plan, so efforts are very much underway. August 11th will come back up as I go through the timeline. This Friday is the deadline for SB 63 to pass the Senate. I am very excited to report that it actually passed last night. Senator Wiener was able to take it to the floor, and it received 28 votes in the state Senate. It needed 21, so we are excited by that support, and it now moves on to the Assembly. From my experience in Sacramento, when things get to the second house, they really accelerate. So the Policy Committee deadline in the Assembly is just about 6 weeks away in mid-July, on July 18th. Then the legislature does take a summer recess, but a lot of work continues to go on bills during that recess, depending on how much is required. And we do have an August 11th deadline to decide which counties are in, set those final sales tax rates, and have the detailed expenditure plan that I mentioned before. The Assembly appropriations deadline is August 29th. It can be amended on the floor up until September 5th and must pass by September 12th, which is the end of session, and then the governor has 30 days to act on the bill. Those are the broad outlines. Of course, there's a lot of layers here on both the state budget and SB 63, and I'm, again, excited to be here at the SFMTA and to make this first presentation to you all, and look forward to hearing your questions. And of course, we will continue to keep you updated as these efforts continue.
Thank you, Mr. Judson. Colleagues, are there any clarifying questions before we go to public comment? Okay. Let's open public comment on Mr. Judson's report for 2 minutes each.
Very good. Members of the public wishing to provide comment will have 2 minutes each. There will be a warning sound at 30 seconds and a chime when the time is up. Any speakers can come up to the podium at this time. Seeing none in the room, we do have one accommodation request.
Yeah, one question I have about these sources of funding for MTA is, I think there should be internal expenditures in the form of nifty managers making over $100,000 a year who have a salary with no increases for the duration of the crisis. Also, projects that are not funded should be placed on hold. No projects. This applies also to the Bicycle Coalition, which should not receive funding MTA, and they should actually pay for licenses, parking, just as motorists pay, and what San Francisco should transfer to the police department. I think this would be source of savings for MTA. Now, the public has made a lot of sacrifices, including increases in for public transportation, and the sacrifice should be reciprocal. So these are my suggestions to rectify the present crisis. Thank you.
Thank you. No other speakers.
Thank you. We will now close public comment. Mr. True, I apologize.
That's absolutely fine. It's my grandfather's name, so I always like hearing it.
Oh, that's very good. All right, colleagues, comments, questions? Director Felder.
I guess one thing that would be helpful, and I don't expect it now necessarily, but is if based on, and I recognize that the state budget at this point is in flux, and it's hard really to get a sense of where it's going to end up. But at some point, it would be helpful, based on some of the reductions that are possible and the impact that they would have on our funding sources, what in any given fiscal year, what the total implication would be above and beyond what we have currently been anticipating. Does that make sense?
Yes. We can provide especially once this June 15th deadline passes and we have a better sense of how that plays out and how the cap and invest conversation is going, we can outline that, because we do know like how many dollars we're expecting on the capital side, you know, between FY 27 and 30, when right now it looks like they'll go away. Now we are very actively involved in the negotiations with the California Transit Association, other operators, and we know everyone understands the importance of transit, so we're hoping we end up in a better place, but we can definitely provide that.
Thank you. Vice Chair Kahina?
Thank you for your presentation, Judson. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to expand a little bit more on the $17 million loss for muni discount fare programs in particular. similar to Director Felder, like I think having a better understanding of what that really looks like for members of the public would be really great to just create more awareness around. But if you have some preliminary information on that, like these are the programs that would be affected and this is how it would be affected, would be great to share that information if you have it.
Yes, I think it's important to emphasize that that is the most direct operating cut that would start, and not this coming fiscal year, but the one after it, and that would be an ongoing issue that where we would either need to, you know, that it basically adds to our deficit, and we have to, you know, just do everything we can to try to make sure that that cut doesn't happen, because it does, it would affect most, if not all, of our discount programs. We can find out exactly what the total cost is for those programs and how much this represents of it, but I think it's a fairly significant portion, but we can double check that and get back to you. I don't know, Director Kirschbaum.
For instance, is one of the programs we're talking about, like Free Muni for Youth, or is it just?
Yeah, yes. It's
yes.
All
so our this would impact almost every discounted fare program we have, including our free youth program as well as our free program for low and moderate income seniors and people with disabilities. That being said, the board would always have the option to fund those programs a different way. It would just create a $17 million hole somewhere else. So
right.
There's nothing specific about these programs riding on this funding source, but we are grateful to have this funding source as a way of offsetting the subsidies.
If not for this funding source, though, Julie, does it become, it sounds like it becomes increasingly challenging to retain these programs given the financial situation we're in right now.
It comes becomes a direct trade-off with service cuts.
On the advocacy front, on that piece alone, Judson, do you feel you have the support that the agency needs to advocate for that position in particular?
I think the short answer, Director, is yes. But we, you know, continue to work with. There's a fairly broad coalition that's engaging on transit funding in Sacramento. But we can always do more to sort of activate it and to make sure everyone has the information. So we can come back to you with it specifically what we're doing on that front. But I think we do expect a significant amount of ongoing advocacy for transit funding, including these dollars for LTTOP, as the Cap and Invest program discussion continues through the summer. And so we will look forward to, we can work with the board to engage all of you, and we can really step up those efforts in the weeks and months ahead.
Thank you. And anything you can do to emphasize that piece, I would encourage the team to do that in any way that, of course, we as board members can support the agency on that front. Consider us partners in that.
Thank you.
Director Heminger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Judson, I hope you come to all of our meetings, because we may be getting out of this one at 3 o'clock, which is unprecedented. So you are a lucky charm. Two questions. Where did CAL FIRE come from? Have they always been a recipient in
No.
the cap and trade program?
CAL FIRE is funded through the general fund, but I think it's a proposal the governor has to shift the source of funding for at least a portion of the program. I don't know how much the program costs overall.
Yeah, it's a huge number.
To cap and trade, to yeah. cap and invest, yes. It's
well, and look, our hearts go out to all those folks, so they've got a pretty good hand to play, I would guess, in the legislature. Secondly, look, we both have participated in regional measures before. They typically center around bridge tolls. And it's the worst form of herding cats I've ever run into. And I wonder if you've got a prognosis for the two so-called opt-in counties, whether they're going to opt in, whether the deal is sweet enough for them, or it needs to get even better. What's your thinking on that? What's your intelligence?
Chair Heminger, I think that, as you mentioned, regional measures always involve quite a bit of conversation up until the point that they, you know, move through the legislature. Regional Measure 3 is what I think you were referring to in particular. I think we are looking forward to being as a participant in all the conversations to see if we can do everything we can to have those counties join. We, of course, defer to Senator Wiener and our delegation in those conversations. And so I think that, you know, there are, you know, elected officials and residents and advocates throughout the region that appreciate the importance of transit. And so that makes me optimistic, but I don't think I'm setting any kind of line on the county's participation right now, any kind of betting line.
Well, maybe I'll ask Julie instead. I don't like your answer.
I'm incredibly grateful to Tilly, who has Tilly Chang from the Transportation Authority, who has not only been, you know, representing San Francisco, but also really trying to explain to our regional partners, particularly our southern regional partners, what an important role Muni plays in the region. An MTC's analysis estimates that about 16% of Muni ridership is not San Francisco-based. And so we are cautiously optimistic that both because of their own transit needs and a recognition of the broader regional needs, that Santa Clara and San Mateo are really active right now in all of these discussions. And I think at this point, participation is our best indicator of outcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Director Hinsey.
Thank you, Judson, and thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly on the order. On the order of things to add to your list when you come back and have more information, I think it'd be interesting. I asked for this today if you could, but I totally understand, you know, things are in flux and whatnot. But if you, in addition to the things that my colleagues have asked for, if you could at some point provide a list of affected projects for the TIRCP once those conversations have gotten to a place where you can provide us that information, I think that would be helpful. I think it's as tangible as we can be for the public. I think that would help our advocacy position and help get people on our side. So that's it.
Thank you, Director Hinsey. We can definitely do that.
Mr. True, thank you so much for your presentation. I have a few questions. Well, first of all, it was very interesting to learn more about the Cap and Invest program. And you talked about how there were, if I heard it correctly, essentially two kind of big buckets, continuous appropriations and kind of annual expenditures or discretionary expenditures. Do you have a sense of the division of that? Is it 50-50? Is it predominantly one over the other?
Right now, I believe that the continuous appropriations are 40%. Is that right, Monique? I can double check, but I believe 45-55 or 40, so it's something like that. We can double check and get back to you exactly about that, but it's something in that range.
And is that changing? Is that the governor's discretion?
No, that's the existing program. That's the existing program. Mm-hmm. The only continuous appropriations in the governor's proposal right now are the $1 billion for high speed rail and 1.5 for the CAL FIRE. The amount of money available changes based on the auctions and every year, but a rough estimate is $4 to $4.5 billion a year. Or is that a year? A year, I think, yeah. Okay. And so that gives you kind of a, if it's $2.5 billion, if the governor is basically proposing $2.5 billion of continuous from that, it leaves less for other appropriations.
And is this change contingent on the renaming cap and trade versus cap and invest, or is that just annually there's a change in that?
The program is established with the percentage that is continuously appropriated with that called out. Mm-hmm. And then in the annual process, the governor and the legislature can spend the rest. They can also program that out a number of years as well. So it's not like it's kind of just like a blank slate every year. There are certain things that usually get some of that money, but, and the renaming is part of the governor's proposal. So presumably if the governor and the legislature reach agreement on reauthorizing the program, it would have a new name. Okay. But it's widely called cap and trade around the world. It's sort of a innovative, recognized program to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, broadly speaking.
Right. Well, I personally think cap and invest is a little bit more apt.
Right. I think that the governor would agree.
So... with SB 63, it says the tax would be for 10 to 15 years. Why the range? I understand the range for half to a full cent, but is that by?
I think that's
region?
Subject to the final legislation. So my understanding is right now it has that range, and that it will be determined when the It'll allow that range. So it's basically saying it couldn't be less than 10 or less than 15. But I think that how the measure actually proceeds will determine the number of years. It won't be uncertain for us at some point.
Right. So, and then my greatest concern, I think, based on what I've learned so far, is operating expenses that are tied specifically to our state of good repair, and how much of a concern. Capital projects are very important, and I know that state of good repair is baked into a lot of them, but. How concerned should we be about our ability to maintain that over time, if in a worst case scenario situation?
I think we should be very concerned. Right now, we are already directing a very large portion of our formula funds to train control. Mm-hmm. With the expectation that every time a discretionary grant opportunity comes up, we were going to apply and try to offset that. This would move us in the opposite direction. So we are already minimizing our state of good repair funds on anything but train control, and this would basically further tie them up, which would impact our ability to replace outdated traction power system track that is worn and cracked, vehicles. It would have a very significant impact on the reliability of our rail system.
Are there contracts that we've entered into, say, for the train control project that could be impacted?
Currently, the train control is the primary contract impacted.
Okay. And then the timeline, is it possible to kind of lay on top of that our considerations for our next budget? So because we can't really provide very good direction on budget until we know, until we have numbers that are attached to any particular measure that may be coming forward. How does this impact our budget timeline?
So I appreciate that question, because at the board workshop, I was really hoping to sell you all on a budget process that started about 6 months early and worked through the major policy decisions as early as this summer. We are finding, though, that because of the kind of key building block, which is how much new revenue we can expect, is not really going to be solidified until early fall. It's been challenging to do that. We are regrouping and working in the background on anything that we can be bringing as either scenarios or as policy conversations that we know we're going to need, kind of regardless of the revenue levers, but I don't think we're going to have all of the factors that we need for you to start really making budget decisions until this fall.
So the bill that's tied to the regional measure, if it does pass the legislature mid-September, is it likely we'll have a good indication from the governor's office whether or not he'll be inclined to sign that legislation? Because that would take us to mid-October.
I would say typically there are very active conversations between the legislative sponsors and the governor's office, and there's usually, you know, some sense of where that stands by the time a bill, you know, gets to, you know, to the governor's desk. And in fact, you know, most authors, and I would think in this case in general, I don't want to speak about this bill in particular because I don't have any direct knowledge, but in general, the authors, and in this case, the coalition that's working on SB 63 would work with the governor's office in advance of the legislative deadline to, you know, craft a measure that could achieve gubernatorial support, if that makes sense. So it's not something where you just kind of like wait until you throw it over the fence to the governor's desk to engage the governor's office. It happens earlier.
And I presume the measure, the actual funding measures, I mean, that work is ongoing with our partners at NTC. And,
correct.
You know, they're moving forward, but we cannot move forward in terms of our work until SB 63, until we've got a good sense of SB 63, if it's going to pass ultimately. Okay, that's very helpful. And what Julie, while we wait, are there pieces of learning and understanding that we can accomplish here in these intervening months that will assist us in making these really important policy decisions once we have more clarity?
Yes, there definitely are, and this presentation is sort of an example of how I plan to put something budget related kind of on each of our agendas so that we're not wasting any time. But we do think we can start going through some of the policy directions. I think the parking discussion, you know, for example, is, you know, one thing to discuss in advance. The board's appetite is for either revenue generation or cost savings in a number of different scenarios. We are also, as you know from what we presented at the board workshop, any funding scenario, we're assuming about $5 million of additional efficiencies through things like the Muni Forward program and $10 million in ongoing savings that would come out of things like how we set up our contracts or potentially out of staff positions. So those are things that we can also be working on. in the background now that we have the current year's budget or the upcoming year's budget stabilized.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Very much. Director Chen, I apologize. Didn't see.
Sorry, I'll just really quickly. In terms of like total exposure to the fiscal year, the budget starting in July of 26, right? Fiscal year 26, 27. So it's the $17 million in LCTOP. There's the $2 billion, the bridge funding, of which there's the bridge funding, and then there was the other sources seem to be mostly capital funding, but are some of those sources being flexed operations currently?
I think all of those dollars that are at risk, besides the $17 million and the bridge funding, the $2 billion portion of a statewide allocation that would come to us, are all capital. It's muni forward and train control, and we can get you a breakdown by year. So it's the 245 is over, I think, 2 to 3 years starting in FY27. So we can get that exact amount for you. But
okay, yeah, just trying to make sure there wasn't some other exposure that we had in the operating budget. Oh, yeah. And then I know this is sort of incidental, but will we be seeing a similar report possibly on the local funding measure?
I would defer to Director Kirschbaum, but I think that's on the list of, you know, items that we will want to bring to you, you know, in advance of getting into the budget conversation.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So this is not, we don't need any vote for this. So thank you, colleagues, staff, and members of the public. We are now adjourned. Our next meeting will be on June 17th.